Who am I handing over to?
Ajuna.
Ajuna?
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. We last came to the board in May 2016, I believe, when we brought a paper on the cast restrictions proposals. And there we were instructed to ask to go back and think about the proposals and how to move forward with them. In response, the paper 11D that we have presented stressed out how we would think we should go forward with these. To address the board's request, the staff developed a revised set of proposals that considered all the feedback that we had received to the exposure draft that we had put out in 2014, and then any subsequent comments that we had received afterwards. The revised set of draft wording was circulated among the GPF and the CMAC members, subsequently with supplementary questions to pinpoint what exact requirements or concerns that they had. So we had analyzed and gone through their comments, and those comments are summarized in the paper in paragraph 26 to 35. The analysis of the feedback received highlighted that many of the information that's kind of in the remit of the investors' needs are largely covered by the requirements that we already have in IFRS, namely IS 1, IS 7, IFRS 12, and IFRS 7. If we list out, if we summarize all the requests that they had put forward, most of them would fall into the buckets of contractual, statutory, or legal type of restrictions that might come up. On the other hand, we were trying to establish whether there were economic type of restrictions out there that investors were interested in, and that was the main idea, and the draft wording had embedded that the need or the requirement. And we also had a question within the draft requirements to ask them what type of economic type of restrictions that they foresee, and the response that we got was primarily the tax liabilities on repatriation of cash and cash equivalent balances, and that was the main feedback that we got. There weren't any other examples that came into our remit. The other group that we had circulated the draft requirements were obviously were the preparers, and from their point of view, their main concern was that trying to identify the range of circumstances that might trigger these type of disclosures and trying to understand the circumstances in which you might have restrictions of economic nature. For them, it was, for example, if you take the tax liability example, what would be the possible situation where they could indicate that they would have a liability in the future or they would have tax consequences in the future? Understanding that was their biggest concern. And what they came back to us and said was, it depends on different tax strategies, facts and circumstances that would only arise. So it was, from their point of view, a hypothetical situation. And until they have established the fact that they have transferred certain balances, that they would not be considering it that far early in their processes. So the concern was any disclosure that they might come up with might not be as meaningful and might not provide the full picture. It also stretched into the other area of their concern, which was that these proposed requirements were targeting only cash and cash equivalent balances, whereas they keep a lot of their funds in other forms of liquid assets. And providing a disclosure only on these types of balances might give an incomplete picture of their position, of their liquidity position. So that those were their main concerns among minor others. Apart from the work that we had done, we had also reviewed a sample of entities that were in our databases. And the methodology of our research is, I think, provided in Appendix B to the paper, which sets out the methodology. What we found out from that review was that most of the disclosures that were provided on cash restrictions were light in terms of certain details, and that it could be improved, the disclosure and the detail of that information could have been improved. The other part of our work stream was to observe what was happening with the FASB project, FASB project on cash restrictions. It was concluded, I think, last month, and the details are again provided in Appendix C for your view. And what came out of that was that the requirements that the FASB ended up will be very similar to what we already have in IS 7. And that was the conclusion provided. On the basis of the work carried out, we think the board could consider enforcing, reinforcing the disclosure requirements that's already provided in IFRS standards. We think that the board could contribute to fulfilling the informational gap. I just talked about the details, the lack of detail that's included in the in these disclosures, by developing illustrative examples on disclosure on cash restrictions, or by reviewing the disclosure requirements as a part of a PIR of IFRS 12, which has a requirement already, which again narrates a lot of listed out requests from the investors about restrictions that they foresee. We are of the view that the options that I just mentioned are more preferable than adding a new amendment, and there is a risk, and I quote from an investor point of view, where so one investor actually said that there is a risk that adding a new example would make it adjust another disclosure requirement. So those were the concerns and those were the comments that we had heard. If I could draw your attention to page number 17, where we have the question, and the question from the board is whether they agree with the staff recommendation not to amend IS-7 to require entities to disclose restrictions that would affect the entity's decision to transfer cash and cash equivalent balances.
Where you going?
I support staff proposal, and I also like particularly the Appendix A. You know, every time we discuss about the disclosure requirements, sometimes I personally feel we run into somewhere we want to have more. And secondly, we may want to have a so-called integrate in one bucket, but it will not work. It's because we already have requirements from different standards. And this is a very good example. I think in the future, when we anytime want to, you know, have such an intention to require more or integrate it, we have to also be very careful. So I like particularly this section.
Sorry.
I don't really agree with the recommendation, but I'm probably not going to lay in the tracks to. Is the staff, if we look at Appendix A, and there's a lot in there, is the general view is there's enough in here? You know, if to look at the total of cash, internal liquidity, and stuff.
Yes.
Yes.
Then again, appreciating the people here, we're not those 2+ years ago when this project started. Why isn't it being complied with? Do you have any sense? Is it not applicable in some cases, or it's so obvious you don't need it? Why is there an enforcement or compliance problem?
I think what we heard was most of the preparers understand it to be contractual, statutory, and legal. And in certain times, although the requirements do ask for the amounts, so all the requirements actually ask for the amount of balances. The amount of balances is the key information which is sometimes missing. There is a narration about the nature of the restriction, and when it would apply, when it might cease, but the lack of information is about the amount of the balance. And what we understand is certain instances, it's difficult to come to that number. And so the auditors or the regulators or the parties concerned might be satisfied with the information already provided, because up to a certain extent you do give a bit of information so that the reader might be able to come to that approximation themselves. But what we found from the analysis was, I think, the amount of the balance which was missing.
But there you would probably argue, well, then you say it's either not determinable, and that should be required disclosure, or you have to argue it's immaterial. You know,
you're right, Gary.
Or it's a wide range with outcome, you know, dependent on many things, you know. But you're sitting here, we've been on this project for 2.5 years to come to the conclusion, well, the standards are already there. You really raise the back to the original problem statement if the answer is right in front of you. You know, so is this packaged wrong, you know, or should it be something isn't working here. I mean, users are unhappy. We're saying the standards are here, in different compliance. Just something isn't coming together here. It seems something should be done.
In terms of our review, Appendix B, we did a desk focused review. So we did not talk to preparers of those entities providing those details to understand better their circumstances. So that's why we are very cautious. And what we have in here is what we have observed. And that might provide us some evidence why there is an information gap, but we don't know the reasons of that.
I understand, because it also might not be applicable too. You know, what the thing is, besides tax, which is the most common, there's all, going back at least in the commercial industrial, there's all sorts of other restrictions that might not be big. You know, it's surety bonds, bid bonds, compensating balance arrangements in support of your debt, you know, minimum liquidities, you always have so much cash or something against debt service, you know, for the next coming months. So there's plenty of other things in your comment. And I do agree with the preparer's view is that focusing only on cash and cash equivalents is not the total thing. You should have all the other short-term marketable securities or all the places that you park temporary cash. Exactly what I told Eduardo and Christy 2 years ago, you got it too narrow. So having it come back is a reason not to proceed. You appreciate why that's not landing well here, because I've been telling you for 2 years that should be in scope. And but something just, you know, we spend a lot of time on fair value and accrual accounting. We just, I don't think as a group we spend just enough time on liquidity and equivalent type things. And I mean, I'm not necessarily getting, like, so I'm not going to lay the tracks to kill this one, but I'm not happy with how, you know, the entire gestation of this project. Again, appreciating three of you here were not there when this started.
Marshall?
Yeah, I'm really happy to kill that. I totally agree with the staff recommendation, because I think that was always my concern, that I think clearly maybe there's a deficit in how entities report about their liquidity overall. But that was a decision. We don't want to have a liquidity project now, and this deals only with this limited amendments to IAS 7. And that was a main concern I already had against that, because, and it clearly shows, okay, it is only about tax, but if there is material amount of tax sitting in foreign locations, I think that is also in other kind of liquid assets other than cash and cash equivalents. And therefore, this limited disclosure would give a small piece, which a lot of cost and maybe also misleading information. And therefore, I think it is a right conclusion now and the right staff recommendation to kill this project, because it will not provide the benefits of really. And maybe you are right. Overall liquidity is not sufficiently reported, but this requires then a broader project and not this very limited thing, which could have misleading information about only what people think about is in taxing. And therefore, I totally agree, and I congratulate to this excellent paper. Thank you.
But I would come back with all that, at least, again, not putting myself in a banking or an insurance, heavily financial services regulated company. Other companies, you know where your cash is, and you know what your ability or lack thereof to get your hands on it out of the operation. So I think, you know, maybe not determine the exact last dollar or euro or something, but I think companies know, you know, what they can and can't do with their available cash. They certainly legally know where it is, because it's got to be in a bank account owned by a legal entity.
Yeah, but also, if it is not a bank, I think also a commercial company who have material amount of cash would invest that in liquid assets, like securities,
which would not be under... That's why it should have been in scope.
Yeah, exactly, but this is a different discussion.
Steve?
So I disagree with the staff recommendation. I think we should carry on with this. So I appreciate Martin's concern that just focusing on cash is limited. I absolutely agree. And that it would be better focused on the surplus assets, which would be better employed elsewhere in the group, and what restrictions there are from a tax perspective in terms of their transfer. And I've always felt that we could do some good here. It may not be perfect, but that simply pointing people towards taxation, I mean, it could be IAS 7, it could be IFRS 12, because I think IFRS 12 as well doesn't really get to this tax issue. I mean, you could read it that way, but I'm sure people choose not to. which is why we lack this information. So I still feel it could have just been one half a sentence added that would have just solved the problem.
Well, I just looked at the brackets that say e.g. statutory, contractual and regulatory and think that we've given people a perfect excuse because we chose the worst examples because of the obvious ones. But anyway, Daryl?
So I think I agree with everything Gary said in terms of I was just really concerned about what we were saying about the disclosure. And it seemed to be, without necessarily reading into it, that we were saying that all the requirements are there, but people aren't complying with it. Then I agree completely. There's no point in adding a new requirement if it is ignoring all the previous ones that were there before. But I don't think that's, perhaps to reverse that, I think that is probably then a call to action, just a different form of call to action. Also agree with what Steve said is that I'm still reluctant to say, I'm reluctant to pull the plug on this, partially because of that. But I did have one other question, which was a concern for me in thinking through this 2.5 year process over long we've been. The users' views seem to have narrowed through the process that you've done. I just want to confirm that that is right. I seem to have in mind that the users were sort of on a path saying we have to have this information, this is really, really important information. And that this process that you've gone through seems to have narrowed it down and said, well, actually, it's not as important as we're making it sound. And what it is just this one narrow little bit of additional information.
Yeah, so we have learned throughout this process that the information benefit, the benefit of that extra piece of information would allow credit analysts to refine better the haircut that they apply to the cash, so that they could understand what is at the cash available to settle debt. So that would be a better refinement of the general assessment that they might do. So, but this is actually, it works with any piece of information that the entity provides. So they have like a standard haircut of 25%, let's say, but if the entity provides more information that could help them understand the availability of cash balances, then that haircut would be reduced. So nothing prevents entities to provide the most relevant information they could be providing so that this haircut gets reduced. So the extra benefit, sorry.
When you use the word provided, you mean provided in the public domain?
Yes,
or?
Well, in the financial statement, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the only extra benefit that we found that this specific requirement could provide to credit analysts. We also talk, apart from CMAC members, to another analyst, and we follow up all of the restrictions that they consider when assessing the availability of those cash balances, and we then compare to the requirements in IFRS 12, for example, and he said, well, actually, for example, trapped cash is in many cases caused by minority interests, which is something required by IFRS 12. So he said, yes, eventually, actually, I could have many things in here that could help me in my assessment. And he seemed surprised to have those requirements already in there. So actually, he was quite happy, but that doesn't mean that he always finds them.
But even if I look at the requirements and we're saying, you know, it's all here, people just aren't doing a good job, but are they? Because given that we say an entity shall disclose significant restrictions and we say e.g. statutory, contractual and regulatory, e.g., it's only an e.g., but still it's the ones we list. And then in IAS 7 we say you disclose amounts that are not available, and then we give, you know, in paragraph 49 what we mean by that. Examples include exchange controls or other legal restrictions. It's all very legal. I don't see where in here we think that the perfect application would necessarily make it clear to somebody that they would need to provide information if they've got money tied up in a jurisdiction where there's massive tax consequences of repatriating that cash.
So we also talked to the tax team here, and they told us that until the transfer of cash balances were not going to be probable, it would be very difficult for entities to come up with an assessment of whether those tax costs would be actually a restriction. Okay, so we also contrast how feasible would be.
I've worked in a multinational. We knew that there were jurisdictions where you couldn't move cash.
The tax team has also worked with many preparers, and that's why we came out with this feedback from them. So they understood the difficulties that preparers might face when having to provide this disclosure. So this is something that we have not come up on our own.
But to one point, man, you can maybe you can find tax strategies to avoid this economic things, even if you have few things. And based on the strategy, what then the impact is? I think it is difficult. It is not so easy to say I have such cash, and if I want to repatriate, I have to pay this amount of money. And that is why companies maybe have thousands of tax guys sitting there to find out ways that it does not cost any economic. And this is all ethical, I know it's different discussion.
Yeah, but yeah. I think the tax is a different discussion, because you're right. I mean, all sorts of tax planning, but if you've got restricted cash to hold up borrowing agreements or, you know, minimum for debt service, you probably roughly know those numbers. You know, with the same thing, bid bonds and surety bonds, which are very common, you know, out there, that you've got the financial resources to do the job or whatever, that's probably known within a tolerable limit of precision.
Okay, Mary, sorry.
Yeah, I think I'm in the camp that is expressing at a minimum regret that the staff recommendation is to not pursue it rather than pursue it. First of all, the issue of its focus too, it's fatally flawed because it's focused too narrowly. We'd have to go back and start again with a water scope, et cetera. I think we are setting out what the minimum disclosure requirements are, and if an entity thought that discussing restrictions, which suddenly seemed, and sorry, I fell into the trap of calling them restrictions, I think of them as economic disincentives. no, seriously, especially when we're talking about, there may be some restrictions, and I think those are captured by the EGs that Sue cited, but when we're talking about economic disincentives that might reduce the value, you know, the apparent value of the cash, if people thought they were going to be penalized too much because the focus was narrow, there's nothing that stops them from having a comparable description of liquid assets. So having it too narrow, I kind of discard as a fundamental flaw. So, you know, if we've spent this world long and the world has not ended, maybe continuing to work on it right now, as much as I regret walking away from it, is not the highest priority. But I think the point about practice is not good, we think practice is not good. I think we should, at a minimum for the PIR of 10, 11, 12, look at this issue, think about whether there are, I kind of wish we had agenda decisions that said, you know, that could make the point that that's an EG, not a limit. Yep. on what you have to consider, and that having drawn attention to issues about trapped cash, etc., that people should think more broadly about the applicability. Yep. of these requirements. And I think when we do the PIR of 10, 11, 12, you know, maybe specifically ask what, if any, changes we should make, especially limited wording changes, if there's, you know, something. Yep. That could be done to improve practice in this area, because it seems to be a combination of behavior and wording that implies. Yep. One thing rather than the other. But I hate giving up on this, because if we're not seeing the disclosures, and I think your review in terms of how few were really good and how many were very light or boilerplate, says there is a practice problem in this area.
I think at a minimum we need to have it on the list in bold for IFRS 12 so we don't forget it. Also, I think we should think about whether there's anybody we can talk to in terms of raising a flag that we are a bit concerned about the quality of application of these requirements, maybe the international technical partners, some of the regulators, just to highlight that it's something we think should be on the radar, where we think there might be scope for improvement based on the current requirements.
Right, because what I really feel a tool we're missing is the equivalent of the Interpretation Committee's agenda decisions that says, we think if you take A plus B plus C, these point you to doing X, and the very fact of having an agenda decision, and I'm sorry, but a comment about a discussion and update just isn't the same. If we had something like that, I think it's something that people could point to in terms of starting to prompt changes in behavior and how the disclosure requirements
are. Pass the EG.
Yeah, getting past the EG, and so that's what I'm thinking about, whether we can use the PIR process and some of the more formal documents that we publish, both to solicit input and then to feedback.
Yep.
To convey some of that.
I'm all right.
And that's a reluctant fallback.
I was about to comment exactly what you mentioned, Sue. I think what I learned from this project is first, there's a perception of frustration because there is some level of information that's not available today that is important. And I do agree with Martin, for instance, only cash is really not enough. I come from a region where inflation is relatively high considering the levels that you have in Europe and other places. So most companies, whenever they can, they will keep this not in cash, they will keep in other types of assets. So this is an issue. So then the lesson I think we should take from this is the importance of have the proper scope. So when we are discussing things like that, we should really strive to have the right scope, not to embark in a whole journey to investigate one aspect that at the end of the day we are frustrated because we didn't establish the scope in a level that we understood would be the right one. So I think it's important to express this frustration, but we are responsible for it at the end of the day because we were bright enough, I would say, to visualize that at inception. We were somewhat historically. So the second point is just expanding what Sue mentioned. I think another lesson of this project, and we should maybe be aware of similar situations in recent past or in the future, that whenever we identify issues of lack of compliance or lack of enforcement, this is not really our job, right? This is there's a lot of people that are supposed to be working on enforcement and compliance, so auditors and regulators. I think it's a good, since we do not have an agenda
decision,
I think we should share this formally with the ones who are involved in the compliance process, including preparers, not only regulators, not only auditors, but also preparers, because I think it's important for them to perceive that we identified something that is truly non-compliant with IFRS. And one last comment, the paper is excellent. I really like the paper. I think it's difficult to say no to the staff, in my view. It's really difficult to say no to staff's proposal, in my view, because although frustrated, yeah, that's it. Otherwise, would be another totally different project. And at this very moment, we do have our decision about projects. So if we had the freedom to say, well, let's do it, but with the proper scope, I would be happy to do so. But at this very moment, I understand we have our pipeline of projects already started. So thanks for the paper.
Mary?
I think I'm going to try and suggest rewarding good staff behavior in paper with punishment, which is, you know, the message in here that if you read the principles and don't focus too much on particular words like e.g., you know, that you get to, you when you put it all together, it creates a framework of expectations for disclosures in this area. Would it be possible for staff members to, you know, to think about a short article, something that we highlight on our website that kind of says lessons learned in just pulling together a discussion of what the, you know, how you put together requirements that are scattered across the different standards. You know, we complain when people satisfy disclosure requirements by having little bits all over the place. I think one of the reasons it might have taken this long to get to the when you assemble all the requirements, you know, that they get you pretty far, would be some kind of insight or highlight point. Well, we decided not to do this. Here's one of the lessons that it points out about the sum total of all of the requirements and what that might lead you to expect. It wouldn't be authoritative. It's just insights learned from a project like this.
At the risk of criticizing the staff, and that's not my intent, but I just, given the comments made about the paper, I think we do need to be a little bit careful. And I'll tell you one of the examples of what made me a little bit nervous when I, or anxious when I read the paper, was quoting that one preparer suggested that the tax implications of moving cash should be largely understood, given that unprovided deferred tax on overseas reserves has to be disclosed. I mean, we know how difficult tax disclosures are. Do we really think?
No,
what a preparer said.
We also criticised this in paragraph 40, actually. So we are in agreement with you. We did not think that was enough for us.
Yeah.
So the staff paper considers this. Yeah.
Okay. So on that note, subject to some follow-ups, can I see a show of hands for who supports the staff's recommendation? How many have we got in the room?
10. Split.
That's why we need half.
Okay. In view of that vote, do we want to try again? Just to be sure.
Sure.
Lots of people said it was unfortunate, Bart, so.
As a manager suggested.
Let's just be clear. So what are we deciding? If we vote for what the staff recommends, we wouldn't be making an amendment to IAS 7.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we would be thinking about ways to follow up with other parties to flag our concerns.
Yes.
So it's not
saying
we wouldn't
do nothing.
It's not an amendment. So if I rephrase, and the PIR of IFRS 12 will definitely follow it up. So. On that basis, who can support the staff's recommendation not to amend IAS 7? Maybe if I put it that way.
So
hold your hand up and keep it up. Still five.
Still five.
So bring it back again.
because I don't think amending 7 is going to fix it.
Yeah, that's the issue.
So
yeah.
I think I have to vote for it, even though I hate it.
Yeah.
So.
that's basically, I think, the general feeling, because if we do not agree with staff, we do recognize that cash only is not enough. So we are talking another project. This is the main issue. So that's basically why I'm agreeing with staff. It's not because I'm not frustrated by not receiving, persevering on the issue, but it's basically because if I agree, I'll be creating an amendment that means an incomplete figure,
right,
incomplete
exactly.
Something. That's the issue. So,
all right, and on that note, it's the end of board meetings for 2016.